you're tuned to 93.1 Life FM. It's great to have your company here on this Monday morning. Now, this week is Eating Disorders Awareness Week, and every year for the past few years, we have been able to chat with somebody about it and kind of explaining what's happening here in and around Cork. But today, we have a bit of a different story, and it's the story of one woman and her, I suppose, the struggles, but also the recovery. And I'm really pleased to introduce Anna, who's here in studio with me today. Anna, thank you so much for being here.
No problem, a pleasure.
So Anna, I suppose, first of all, let's just tell our listeners, it is Eating Disorders Awareness Week, and why is a week like this important?
I suppose the key around Eating Disorder Awareness Week is to promote awareness. And awareness is just absolutely vital for recovery, for early detection, and just, I suppose, education and awareness. So, you know, I suppose we all know different awareness weeks around different times, and eating disorders is something that isn't overly spoken about. It's, a hidden, nearly, disorder that people aren't very much aware of because it's not really easily identifiable. So it's very important, I suppose, to take the taboo out of eating disorders, to take the stigma out of it, and to raise awareness and education for both sufferers and for carers, family members, friends, teachers.
And it can be quite complex because, as we were chatting briefly before we came on air, there's different struggles that people can have. And when you go through recovery and those issues, say it's alcoholism, for example, you can live without alcohol. But with eating disorders, it's around food, and we need food to live, but there can be complexities around the thinking of that. So I think the struggle can be really more complex maybe than some other issues.
It is, because it's, you know, you're trying to relearn and become friends again with food, who you have convinced yourself is your enemy. So it's very, very difficult. You're constantly facing, you know, a 24-hour battle with something that absolutely terrifies you. And I suppose with eating disorders, the thing is, it's not actually about the food. Eating disorders are a coping mechanism. They're a coping tool for people who have something going on in their lives, who aren't able to express themselves, who find just generally life is a struggle for them, and this is their way of coping. And at times, I think, of, you know, at the start of an eating disorder, the person themselves doesn't even know what's going on. You know, I know for me, myself, I didn't know that I even had an eating disorder at the start. It was just something I had come up with all on my own, and I knew it wasn't right, but it was helping me. It was helping me cope, it was helping me take my mind off things, and it served a huge purpose, but to a detrimental effect as time went on, because I suppose I felt I was in control of this coping mechanism and that I could stop using it when I needed or when I felt better. So when it came to that point, it was actually the reverse. The eating disorder had a hold of me and had control over me. So it's very hard, you know, when you're in recovery, to be fighting something that you fear so much, and that is food. So you're trying to relearn and to I suppose not listen to the voice of the eating disorder. And I know I mentioned that to you just before we came on air. The voice of the eating disorder is something so complex, so loud, so harmful, but because nobody can see it, it's very hard to explain actually what that is.
It's just happening inside and it's this thing spinning. So Anna, let's go, I suppose, back maybe to the beginning of your story, because you talk about coping mechanisms. We all have them, don't we? As human beings, we all have coping mechanisms. We may recognize them, we may not. For some people it may be, I just need to quiet the voice in my head, so I'm going to sleep. I need to quiet the voice in my head, so I'm going to go shopping because that surge is going to make me feel better. There, we all have different coping mechanisms. So share with us a bit about the beginning of your story as to this coping mechanisms and how food started to be that, or lack of food, or whatever your situation is.
I suppose for me, I can identify it starting when I was in secondary school. So I would have been maybe in fifth year in secondary school, and I suppose a traumatic event happened, and that was the death of my granny. And it was my first experience of somebody close to me passing away. So I didn't know what to do with that. Yeah. I didn't know what to do with the feelings. I didn't know how to talk to people about it. And I know I didn't want to talk to my family about it because I could see they were visibly upset and I didn't want to upset them anymore by my upset. So I just kind of kept it all inside. And I suppose the use of food and, you know, different behaviours that come with an eating disorder started to creep up very, very slowly. I suppose unknowns to myself, really, to be honest, because I, at that time, I didn't really know anything about eating disorders. They weren't widely spoken about.
Okay.
I didn't know the behaviours. I didn't know anything about them. So for me, I thought I had made up this idea myself. And for whatever reason, it was just making me feel a little bit better to be able to cope with feelings, a little bit better that I had a little bit more control over what was going on. So I suppose it just kind of spiraled out of control from there. So as time went on, I kind of, the voice was always there. I suppose the voice of the eating disorder is a huge factor. It's something that's there 24 hours a day. And it's not like you're hearing voices or somebody else is telling you to do things. It's actually your own voice in your head. So that's where it becomes very confusing.
Mm.
Because you're listening to your own voice telling you, you know, to not eat this or not have that or to eat this or, you know, whatever the case may be. So you kind of become very best friends, basically. I used to describe it like that the eating disorder was my best friend, but it was my worst enemy.
Hmm.
Both rolled into one.
Okay.
So it was very hard to separate the two. And I suppose as time went on, the eating disorder voice, which was my own, was getting louder. And I felt that my own personality, that me, that Anna, was being smothered, that I was still in there, but I was just being pushed down deeper and deeper. So I convinced myself that the eating disorder voice in the end was actually my own. So, you know, sure, it's me that's telling me to do these things. It's me that's telling me I look like that. I'm horrible. I'm fat. I'm ugly. I'm, you know, useless. You know, why would people want to be friends with me? All these types of things all the time. And if you're hearing that 24 hours a day, why wouldn't you believe it?
And there's so much destruction that comes from that, isn't there? I mean, we talk about these issues of bullying or cyberbullying, and we have other people telling us these things. But what you're describing is really self-bullying, but not purposefully. It's just this conflict, this conversation in the head that I'm sure you get to the point where you say, would you just stop? Please stop. Something has to change. So what helped you, or what was the first point that things started to change for you?
Well, I suppose, you see, for me, my eating disorder would have gone on for about 17 years, which is a very long time.
Wow.
And it would have taken different forms, different, I suppose, different ways of it being intense. So I suppose toward the end of it, I have three children. And I suppose at the time when my eating disorder was at its worst, I had two children at that time. So I think it was just, I was always waiting for somebody to tell me what to do. And if you just do this, this and this, your eating disorder will go away and you'll be fine. But it didn't. And I was always waiting for this epiphany nearly. And it just so happened, I suppose, when I stopped waiting for that epiphany and stopped searching, that something just happened. I suppose at that time, maybe back in 2008, 2009, I would have had a couple of hospital admissions. And there was one particular point where it was coming up to Christmas time. And I was in hospital for a period of a number of weeks. And it just wasn't right. I just felt that something just clicked in my mind that, hold on a second, Anna, this isn't right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I should be at home with my kids. I should be at home getting ready for Christmas. I should be at home putting up the decorations, shopping, enjoying the joy of Christmas and the joy of my children around Christmas. And whatever happened, I just started to fight back.
Mm-hmm.
I just started to fight back with the voice. And I didn't want to listen to it anymore, you know. So it's very hard to say one particular thing helped me change, but I suppose it's, I think it's a number of things, because over all of the years I would have had different types of therapy, for my eating disorder, but outpatient and inpatient, and I think different things over those years, I think, were kept at the back of my mind in a little box, waiting until I was ready, until I could listen, until I could hear it and accept it, and then just take charge.
And to be able to move forward. Mm. And I think there's probably people listening today who are saying, wow, I can relate to that. I can understand that. It's a very difficult fight. And did you find through those years, the 17 years, did you find you were on your own? Were there people trying to support or help or encourage? Did that help or did that backfire? Maybe talk about just the people around you and how those relationships were either affected or helped or hindered.
I suppose at the start, you feel that if somebody approaches you or if somebody is concerned, that your eating disorder is threatened. That this thing that helps you to cope, people are trying to take it off you. People are trying to take it away from you. So it's a very sneaky disorder. It's very secretive, and it twists things in your mind. So we'll say, if somebody passed a compliment to me, oh God, Anna, you look really well today. The eating disorder voice was straight in. Did you hear that now? They're telling you that you're fat, you're disgusting, you're ugly, you need to cop yourself on, you need to listen to me more and just start doing as I tell you. If somebody would have said then that was concerned, you know, my family, friends, that they were concerned, God, you know, I'm really worried about you, Anna, you know, you don't look well or you're not yourself. The eating disorder would kick in and say, okay, we're doing a good job here. What I'm telling you to do was working, and we'll just keep going. So no matter what anybody said or did, the eating disorder twisted it. So it's very, very difficult. And if somebody, you know, would say family or friends that, you know, it's very, very hard for them to have, I suppose, watched me suffering, because anybody who is suffering, you want to help them. You want to make them feel better. But your hands are tied, you don't know what to do. And no matter what, you know, as for example, my husband, no matter what he did, God love him, it was wrong.
Sure.
You know, so it's very hard. So I suppose the huge thing for carers, and there was one particular friend of mine that really, it really helped me, was that she accepted me no matter what way I landed on her doorstep. I used to call to her once a week for coffee. And if I called and I was in the mood for talking, she was there and she accepted that. She never questioned. She never, I was, to her, I was still Anna. She saw beyond the eating disorder behaviour. If I wasn't in the mood for talking, we just chat about stupid things.
Yeah.
Everyday things. And I suppose that's a huge thing, is for carers to remember and to look beyond the behaviour, that the person is still there inside, that they're crying to get out, they don't know what to say, and they're so, I suppose, controlled by the eating disorder. There's a huge guilt attached to want to come out from the eating disorder. I suppose there are two huge things with an eating disorder, is guilt and shame, that you feel so guilty, and the eating disorder makes you feel guilty. I used to feel guilty even thinking about wanting to be happy.
Sure.
You know, so I suppose it's just for carers and friends and family to look beyond the behaviour.
And I think too, with eating disorders, there's the mental and emotional, but there are the physical, there are the physical ramifications behind it, whatever the eating disorder looks like. So you have these things hand in hand. So people immediately see the physical. Oh, you need help, you need help, you need help. You know, we need to fix this, we need this. But you wouldn't say those things if this was purely a mental health condition. So I'd say the combination of both the mental and the physical makes it very complicated to accept help, to receive help, to work through the recovery.
Yeah, absolutely. And I suppose everybody is very much aware, when they hear of an eating disorder, they picture the stick thin girl, or, you know, model, or someone on a magazine. And it's very easy to identify somebody who is, you know, underweight. And we all know that. But eating disorders take all shapes, forms, physical appearances, ages, from teenagers, you know, from preteens. to adults. And I suppose the thing to remember is the struggle and the turmoil going on in the person's mind is all the same, regardless of the physical features. Obviously, for somebody where physical symptoms are, I suppose, you know, kind of a predominant factor, you know, they do need to be to be helped and to be, I suppose, rectified, because, you know, we all know, even if you're sick with a flu and you feel physically unwell, your mind isn't operating properly. You're not thinking straight. So can you imagine if you're, you know, undernourished, or, you know, your electrolyte balance is all askew, or your sugar levels aren't what they should be, you know, it's very hard then for the brain to comprehend and to take in, I suppose, what the person who on the other side is trying to do to help you. You know,
I think that's so important to really just think about. And again, we're here to raise awareness. So Anna, let's talk a little bit. There may be someone listening today, and you've talked a bit about the carer side, but if someone's listening today and they're identifying with you, they're identifying with this voice, they're identifying with the turmoil, if you could speak beyond the mess and just go to the heart of the person, what could you tell them that could help them to start the recovery process?
I suppose the first thing is that they're not alone. And that was a huge thing for me, because I thought I was alone, and because it's not spoken about too much. So, you know, you're not alone, and it's okay to not be okay. It's okay to talk. It's okay to say things out loud, you know, to look for help. I suppose sometimes it's easier to speak to somebody outside of your family or outside of your friends, because there isn't that emotional attachment. I think to speak to somebody who has an awareness around eating disorders, I suppose that's why with the Eating Disorder Centre in Cork is a fantastic place to have, because at the time of my eating disorder, there was nowhere in Cork. There was one centre in Ireland that was similar to the centre here in Cork, and that was based in Dublin. And I used to travel to Dublin on the train once a week. Oof. And sometimes I didn't want to go, and I remember my therapist saying to me, the days that I didn't want to go were the days that I needed to go.
Yeah.
And even going up, and sometimes I didn't even know what to say, but I felt understood. And that's a huge thing, is to feel understood, that sometimes what you what's going on in your mind and what you're thinking and just the whole, I suppose, battle and struggle with eating disorder, that if you when you say it out loud, it sound ridiculous, that no one would have a clue or understand what I was actually even talking about. So to talk to somebody who has an understanding around eating disorders, that they're not going to judge you. They have a huge awareness, and that's of vital importance. It's so important, you know, to know that you're not alone, and that no matter what you say, it's okay. You know, you always feel better if you get something out, if you just say it out and just get it out of your system, or, you know, even write it down on a piece of paper or anything like that. But I suppose that's where, you know, treatment and talk therapy is a huge, huge factor.
Probably even before getting to a place like Eating Disorder Centre Cork, even being able to, I like what you said about the objective person, because if you tell a parent, or you tell a sibling, or you tell a spouse, if you tell them, that can be very emotional. But even booking an appointment with a GP and saying the words, I think I'm struggling with this, there can be a safe place where they can say, let's get you help. Would that be a fair assessment?
Absolutely. And I suppose it's just the weight off your shoulders to say it out loud. But, you know, it's very difficult, because I suppose for me, it took a long time for me to actually accept that I had an eating disorder, because the eating disorder, I suppose, we're going back to the voice of it. It's there all the time. And, you know, for me, it was so loud and so noisy that it was constantly, no matter what, like, as I even mentioned, you know, even the thoughts of wanting to do something, it would make me feel guilty. So it's a huge battle and a huge fight, and that takes a huge amount of work. But once you do it, it's so important. And that's the start of your fight, you know.
So I think that's very clear and very helpful. I suppose it's good to say, if you can't tell a family member or a friend, there are people that you can tell, a GP, or you can tell someone else. But being able to tell someone is the first step.
Yeah.
So after that, then, through your recovery process and through the journey that you've been on, what benefits are you seeing now? Where is the hope that you're seeing for the future, if you will?
I suppose hope is a huge word, and that was a huge key word for me during recovery, because without hope, I wouldn't have had anything, you know, even just the hope for it. And I suppose being on the other side, I'm recovered 6 years now, and being on this side of it, it's even hard to put into words, because it's such a huge thing, because I suppose the eating disorder was a part of my life for so long, that I recovery, yes, I did believe in it, but I believed in it for other people, not for me.
Okay.
I didn't think I was worthy enough for recovery. I didn't think there was anything wrong, because I suppose the eating disorder, being threatened. So being on this side of it now is just, it's like a huge, pardon the pun, but it's like a huge weight lifted from my shoulders.
Yeah.
The noise in my head has gone down. I'm able to be fully present in everything that I do. I know for a time when, I suppose the voice would have been very, very loud in my head, you know, even doing things, even looking back on photographs, and, you know, my daughter might say to me, oh, Mom, do you remember when we were here? And I'd remember where I was eating disorder-wise and what was going on and how bad or not it was, but I wouldn't remember the activity or what we were doing, because my mind was so caught up in it.
Yeah.
So for that alone is just a huge gift. And, you know, recovery isn't easy. It's not a straightforward road. It's not a straight line. There's going to be turns and diversions, you know, along the way. And that's okay too. You know, I suppose, but during your recovery, I suppose another key thing with people who are suffering from eating disorders is the huge onus on perfectionism.
Okay.
Which is a huge thing. So even in recovery, I wanted my recovery to be a straight road. I didn't want any detours.
Of course.
That wasn't good enough. So,
yes.
You know, I kind of had to, I suppose, let go. Once I started to fight back the voice of the eating disorder, that gave me power. That gave me inner strength to want recovery and to believe in recovery for myself.
I really like that. That makes a lot of sense. And it's so important that we are aware, and if we have loved ones that we're concerned about, to try to walk gently in that, but yet we make mistakes in that as well. So I suppose as we come to a close, Anna, what would you like to say to our listeners, whatever side of the spectrum they're on, wherever they're at, what, I suppose, last message would you like to give?
I suppose for sufferers, just remember that you're not alone. There are people there that understand. You know, recovery is possible, and just have hope and believe in recovery for yourself. It's hard at the time to believe that and to say, oh yeah, I'll recover, but you know, being on the other side of it now, recovery is possible, and just remember that you're not alone, and just to say it out loud to somebody. You know, for carers, I suppose, is just to see beyond the behaviour. And to remember that your friend or your daughter or your sister, that person is still there. They've gotten lost along the way, but they're still there.
Okay, that's really helpful. I just want to give the website eatingdisordercentercork.ie, and it is Eating Disorders Awareness Week. It's this week, the 26th of February to the 3rd of March, and it's just important that people know that it's available, and I believe there are events going on throughout the week, but you're kicking it off really for this week. So, Anna, I just want to say thank you very much. Thanks for being here today.
No bother. Thank you.